From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The United States has just signed a deal with the Afghan Taliban in Doha, Qatar, culminating years of peace talks and the first step toward drawing down the longest official war the U.S. has ever fought. Last year, just as a deal was about to be signed, President Donald Trump backed out at the last minute, saying that the Taliban needed to draw down the violence before being entrusted with a U.S. deal. On Saturday, when U.S. Special Representative Zalmay Khalilzad signed the deal with the Taliban leader, it was after an agreed-upon 1 week of lowered levels of violence. The deal is supposed to lead to a withdrawal of U.S. troops from the country within 14 months. But will it actually happen? Will it lead to an end of the war? Or, for that matter, will it lead to peace? My guest is Matthew Ho. He's a member of the advisory boards of Expose Facts, Veterans for Peace, and World Beyond War. In 2009, he resigned his position with the State Department in Afghanistan in protest of the Obama administration's escalation of the war there. Welcome back to the program, Matthew.
Hi, Sonali. Thank you for having me back on.
So we've talked before about this potential deal. Here it is. It's actually been signed. As far as you can summarize for our audience, what are the main points of this deal? I mentioned the withdrawal of troops. There's also supposedly an immediate drawing down of intelligence officials and U.S. intelligence activity and the potential freeing of thousands of Taliban prisoners, right?
Correct. And the deal that was signed is actually fairly short. It's probably less than 1,000 words. Now, there are annexes to it that detail how verification is going to occur and how, various steps that are to occur in this process. But overall, kind of the big bullet point headlines are that within 135 days, so within roughly 5 months, the United States will draw down its forces in Afghanistan from where they are now at about 13,000, 14,000 to 8,600. And our European allies who are in the United, who are in Afghanistan as well, will draw down proportionally as well. And there are about 10 to 12,000 European soldiers in Afghanistan. In return, the Afghan government and the Taliban will begin talks by March 10th, and these talks will be directed at bringing about a power-sharing agreement, bringing about a permanent ceasefire, as well as an exchange of prisoners. If all goes well, then 9.5 months after the U.S. is down to 8,500 troops, so 14 months from the time the agreement was signed, all U.S. and all European, so all foreign forces, should be out of Afghanistan. And the Afghan government and the Taliban will have a power-sharing agreement in place. And at that point as well, again, if it's all going well, then you will have seen a ceasefire that will have been lasting for 14 months. It won't be a complete ceasefire because there are all different types of groups in Afghanistan that don't fall under this agreement, as well as there's also two potentially different Afghan governments being formed right now. So there's lots of complications, but for the first time since 1989 in a more than 40-year war in Afghanistan, so the first time since the Soviet Union left in 1989, there's actually some form of peace deal in place. It's just the first phase of the peace deal, but it is, there is some hope, I should
say. Does the fact that the U.S. signed this deal with the Taliban, excluding very explicitly the Afghan government, signal that the Taliban essentially won because the U.S. threw its lot behind the Afghan government for many years and, of course, officially continues to back the Afghan government? But in doing this deal with the Taliban, leaving out the Afghan government with, you know, the leaders of the Afghan government quite upset about this, essentially the U.S. is dealing with the military force in Afghanistan that is the strongest, that has committed the most violence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Taliban have been winning for 12 years in Afghanistan. Ever since the United States and NATO expanded their presence in Afghanistan, starting around really in 2006, by the time that expansion in Afghanistan reached the Taliban strongholds in the south and the east, the United States and its NATO allies have been losing in Afghanistan. You can call it a stalemate, you can call it whatever you want. You can make the claim that American forces were never defeated on the battlefield. You can say all these things, but when it comes down to it, when you look at the what matters, the big picture in this is that the United States has been losing, and that, you know, and this is, I think, the great tragedy of this, Sonali, is that this was never necessary. I mean, we can go back to after 9/11 and the invasion of Afghanistan, how that was not necessary, how the Taliban had offered to turn bin Laden and the other 9/11 planners over to neutral countries, had offered to negotiate with the United States about it, and the United States under President Bush said it's non-negotiable. You can look at all the various times throughout the last 20 years that have been well documented now. Whether it's by journalists like Anand Gopal or Betty Dahm, or even by the New York Times, that have documented how multiple times over the last 20 years, the United States could have made a deal with the Taliban if they wanted to, but they did not want to, because for the United States, particularly under the Obama administration, the primary concern was military victory, was the desire to win militarily. So the United States government, and along with most of the American media, went along with this propaganda, basically, that the Taliban were not interested in negotiating. And everyone can see how in the last couple of years, all it took to get this deal in Afghanistan with the Taliban, which is by far from perfect, and yes, it has left the Afghan government out, we can get into discussing that, and it's and we should view this as the first phase of a peace process. It's not a final a deal or agreement. So I hate even saying peace deal. It's basically like a peace beginning, maybe. But, you know, I mean, you saw what happened with President Trump, where to get this far with the Taliban, all he needed to do was tell Zalmay Khalilzad, his special representative for Afghanistan, to talk to them. And they were willing to talk. And this agreement, this part of the deal, this part of the process could have been signed back in September. But President Trump had a temper tantrum, basically. And I mean, because the agreement that was signed in Doha, last week was the same agreement that was signed, that would have been signed in September. So the great tragedy of all this is that it was completely unnecessary, not just the invasion, the occupation of Afghanistan, of course, but the fact that for a variety of reasons, primarily, to establish U.S. military dominance, to give the Pentagon a win, because there is no way you could look at Iraq as a win for the Pentagon, to show that President Obama was a better or a stronger commander-in-chief than President Bush was, et cetera. And there are parallels in this to American history. This is certainly what President Nixon and Henry Kissinger did in Vietnam. That's the great tragedy and the great sadness of all this, is that how many Afghans have suffered, how many millions and millions have suffered for, you know, what comes down to domestic U.S. political reasons.
And you mentioned that the Taliban are far from perfect, but of course they're really quite a bit worse than that. The one thing that Trump seemed to be quite upset by last September, in ahead of his temper tantrum, as you put it, was that the Taliban were basically continuing on their killing spree. And last week, 19 security forces and 4 civilians were killed over the past week. That was progress. That was a good week when it came to violence in Afghanistan. So although the U.S. withdrawal may happen and the U.S. may finally end its longest war, there is no guarantee of peace within Afghanistan. There is no necessarily a guarantee of peace between the Taliban and the Afghan warlords that the U.S. has continued to back in the Afghan government. There are still these fundamentalist Afghan warring factions that are well-armed, that are now back in charge of the country. Not that the U.S. was ever going to do anything positive in the country to begin with. But the fact remains that for the people of Afghanistan, this may likely not be the beginning of peace.
Absolutely. It could. You know, I mean, you get this question, right, if which is worse, the catastrophe you're dealing with or the potential catastrophe that's coming. And at least with this, it's moving forward. I mean, I can tell you what it will look like if this agreement doesn't go forward. It will look like the last 20 years. The last couple of years, ever since the Syrian war has abated to it a bit. And now, of course, with what's happening in Idlib, you know, this is probably not true in the current moments. But the Afghan war has been the most violent war in the world in the last couple of years. And again, this is a war that goes back to the 1970s. This is 40 some odd years of Afghans suffering with very little hope for the future, very little promise that maybe anything will get better. So absolutely. I mean, the problem being is that, as you so well put it, there are all these warlords that the United States put into power that are part of the Afghan government and also outside of the Afghan government. And if they feel that they are going to lose out somehow, that they feel if somehow their power base is going to be eroded by this conflict coming to an end, then why will they go along with it? In the same way, too, you could look at the Taliban and say, you know, they already have their base of support. They control their areas in the country. But they have seen incursions from groups like the Islamic State. They have had their issues, even though they're they have ties to the Pakistani government. There also is a lot of animus between the Afghan Taliban and the Pakistani government. The man who signed the agreement in Doha for the Taliban, who is the number two for the Taliban, who has been was a founding member of the Taliban, Mullah Baradar, he spent 7 or 8 years in Pakistani detention because in February 2010, the Pakistanis were upset that he was trying to negotiate, you know, some type of peace, some type of agreement with the Afghan government. And at the behest of the Americans, because in the winter of 2010, the United States did not want any attempts at peace, because at that point we were implementing President Obama's surge, General McChrystal's surge. You had all the troops going into Marja, et cetera.
They didn't want peace to get in the way of the war fighting.
They didn't want. That's exactly right. So you can see that there are the simple notions we have about this conflict are absolutely incorrect. There are no alliances that line up perfectly. There are no groups that you can say this is in black and white. This is what they believe, and this is what all their members will go along with. You know, it's very, very difficult. You know, I mean, and here you have a case even too, say with the Afghan government, where the Afghan presidential election winner, the incumbent President Ghani, won re-election. And that was just announced at the end of February from an election that took place in September. It was so marred with fraud and corruption. It was so illegitimate that it took 5 months to announce a winner. And the man who finished second, Abdullah, who has finished second twice, three times now, excuse me, and who all three times was basically cheated out of a win because the last three presidential elections in Afghanistan have been incredibly fraudulent, he is now going to set up his own parallel government. So not only do you have a Taliban, you have a splintered insurgency, you have the Islamic State, you have all these warlords, as you brought up, Sonali, you also now have the possibility of two parallel governments in Afghanistan.
Wow.
So it is a very difficult situation. But the only thing that you could hope for is that talks keep going forward, that there are reductions in violence that bring about a whole, an actual real ceasefire. And I should also add in too, I have no idea, and you and I have spoken about this on the show, on your show, about the role of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency in Afghanistan. I have no idea if the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency is included in this agreement. I would doubt it is. And the Central Intelligence Agency runs their own paramilitary units, their own assassination squads that are basically reportable to no one. And that's another aspect in this as well, too, is, you know, do they want to lose their power? Do they want to lose what they have going on in Afghanistan? So there are a lot of uncertainties, a lot of complexities going into this. And, you know, to come back to it, because this is where we should always come back to, is that the Afghan people are suffering and they continue to suffer, and there's no economy in Afghanistan. They have a terrible drug epidemic, and they've seen 40 years of war, 40 years of war that has been, that was started by outside powers and sustained by outside powers all throughout those 40 years. So it really is a terrible situation. But at least with this agreement, as imperfect as it is, at least maybe there's a chance that something better might come along.
Now, the New York Times did say the deal will begin the process of drawing down the American intelligence presence. There are many questions about what the role of the remaining military forces and intelligence officers will be. But the rough outline of how the mission is likely to shift has become apparent. I think that it's not clear whether that does include the CIO or not. So there's also the wrench that that Ashraf Ghani threw into the whole thing. A day after, within 24 hours after the peace deal was signed, he said that he was not bound by any deal to free the 5,000 Taliban prisoners that the deal included. It's not clear whether he's stepped down on that, or maybe he plans to use that as a leveraging point for future negotiations between his government, one of two parallel governments, it looks like, as you were saying, and the Taliban. What do you make of this?
Well, you know, the big thing about Ghani saying this was, in the way he said it in a press conference, in his 5 years in office, he's only had two press conferences, and this was one of them. So whereas he could have said this behind the scenes, he could have had somebody else say it for him. He said it up front. And it really does, as you say, kind of throw a wrench into it, because if he's already saying that the tenets of the deal, the agreements of the deal are null and void, that gives various Taliban hardliners, because the Taliban are not cohesive, they're not monolithic. And while I have, you know, as I said, they have been in favor of trying to negotiate a peace, but there also have been members of the Taliban, elements of the Taliban that have not been in favor of trying to negotiate a peace. There are hardliners in the Taliban that do want to see not just the restoration of the Islamic Emirate, but a full defeat of their enemies. And so does this now strengthen them? And one of the things you have to be very careful about with the Afghan government is the Afghan government is, and this is not hyperbole, it is the most corrupt government in the world. It is a government composed of warlords and composed of drug lords. It is a government that owes its survival to the presence of U.S. and European forces.
And essentially, it was a creation of the U.S. government.
It absolutely was. And the last, not just in 2001, but as I stated earlier, the last three presidential elections have all been immensely fraudulent. I mean, like you can't even, to call it an election is a misuse of that word. And so it owes its survival and it owes its own existence, as you said, Sonali, to the United States. So why does it want to see the United States depart? Particularly when so many Afghans in the government have become so wealthy. You know, I mean, you can go and you can read about this through a variety of sources, but certainly some of the things that Chelsea Manning released in her WikiLeaks release, that's so valuable and it was so courageous of her to do. Talking about how the United States government knows how these Afghan politicians, these Afghan military officers are smuggling drugs or are bringing pallet loads of cash out of Afghanistan into places like Dubai and places like the UAE. So this is a government that's a kleptocracy, that is a government that does not exist to serve the people in any way. So we should not be surprised if there are elements within that government that do not want to see this deal go through or any deal go through because it threatens not just their survival, but their well-being. I mean, they are making out, like we had a saying when I was in the Marine Corps, riding the gravy train with biscuit wheels, you know? I mean, and that's exactly what I think about when I think about them, because they are just the money streams, the billions and billions of dollars that have gone in there, the billions and billions of dollars that American corporations didn't suck up, these men and their families and their networks sucked up. So there's a lot to be lost among a variety of sides, and also too, you could talk about that here as well. Do you really think, do any of us think that the American weapons companies want to see this war come to an end? You know, I mean, certainly, you know, there are people who are making vast livelihoods, you know, whose careers have been made off of this war. And so their careers and their livelihood, their wealth depends on the sustaining of these wars. And then there are plenty of politicians who don't just enjoy the campaign contributions, but as well, their political what they believe in politically, how they advance themselves, how they see themselves, say like Liz Cheney, the Republican from Wyoming, is a neoconservative interventionist type of political mindset that is very much encased in who they are as a political person. So they don't want to see these wars come to an end either, even if it is being done by a Republican president.
Well, Matthew, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll certainly see how this whole situation plays out. You never know with the news cycle. You never know with the violent, you know, tendencies of the many groups that are involved with the volatile situation, whether this peace deal would last even the week, but maybe it will. Thanks so much, right, as always, for joining us.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Matthew Ho. He's a member of the advisory boards of Exposed Facts, Veterans for Peace, and World Beyond War. In 2009, he resigned his position with the State Department in Afghanistan in protest of the escalation of the war there by the Obama administration. We've been discussing the U.S. peace deal that was just signed over the weekend with the Taliban. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.